This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Good evening. It is Lucy Porter here for the next 2 hours with a marvellous studio guest who I'm very excited about introducing, and our record of the week. So this record of the week, in fact, somebody wrote to me this week and said, Kulsheen wrote and said, are we allowed to nominate records of the week? If so, can you do Bananarama's greatest hits? Which is not a bad idea at all. That may happen in the coming weeks, but not this week, because for this week we have chosen, it's a record of the week. Again, it's someone I just want to be. It's the woman who's stolen my life. She's stolen all my creativity. This should all have been mine, all of her talent. It's amazing. The album of the week is Debut by Björk. Oh, big time sensuality. Yes, Björk's debut, her second studio album, I believe. And I actually, now, again, I'm going to guess what year this came out. Amanda, are you furnished with this information, Amanda?
Not
okay.
Yet.
Right, it's guess the year. It's an impromptu quiz. I'm going to say it's the early 90s. I'm wearing, I'm drinking Snakebite and Black. I'm wearing leggings and men's tartan shirts. I'm picturing that. I'm in Manchester. I'm dancing. 1993, I'm going to say. 1993?
Bang on.
Bang on. Get
Good
me.
Work.
It was the Snakebite and Black that defined it for me, actually. I was like, yeah, that was the year. That was the year of Snakebite and Black. 1993, Björk's debut, which it wasn't actually her debut, but she called it that, collaboration with Nelly Hooper. Amazing album. Amazing record. And I was obsessed with Björk, still kind of am, and it was around that time as well that I threw my then boyfriend out of a car, not a moving car, we'd stopped, on the Snake Pass going between Manchester and Sheffield, and I made him get out of the car because he wouldn't say that he loved me more than Björk. And I think I want to issue an apology now to him, because you were right. She is a better human being in every way than I am, and I can only apologise. So anyway, that's our album of the week. I'll have more personal Björk reminiscences. Do feel free to get in touch on the Twitter if you have any. If you've ever thrown anyone out of a car for any reason, that might be as good an opportunity as any to get in touch. So we'll be hearing some more. Some more songs from that during the week, during the hour, 2 hours. I'm really just not. Do you know when your brain hasn't quite started to work? I've been in the Apple Store in Watford all day, and it really hasn't helped me in any way. Anyway, I'm sure it will come together over the next couple of hours. But quick thank you as well for some. We've had some lovely feedback about last week's show. Last week we had Juliet Burton and Ruth Brandt, who were delightful, and we talked about body image, about Juliet Burton's Twitter spat with a horrible company and a horrible man from a horrible company, and we won't name them. But Becky puts it well. Becky emailed me to say, thanks for a really uplifting show. I found Juliet's story really inspirational. I'm 22 and it's really nice to hear that I might not always feel as crap about my body as I have in the past. You guys made me realise how lucky I am. Which was very sweet. That was very nice. And it was a very sort of uplifting, positive, upbeat, happy kind of show. Which, frankly, I think we've had enough of that. Let's try and make this week more characteristically depressing. And to help me with that, well, who better, quite frankly, than our wonderful studio guest this week, Zoe Lyon.
Hello, here to drag the mood down.
Oh, please do.
Yeah.
It was all a little bit happy-clappy. We were all about positivity and affirmation and
woo! It's as bad as you think it is, and it'll only get worse.
Good, that's the motto for this week's show. Things can only get much, much, much worse. We did actually do, Zoe, last week we had a list of the week, which every week we have a list and people contribute things, so we set up a list,
right.
People write in. We're still getting, the first week that we did it, we did something involving toilets that I'm not even going to recap on, because it keeps,
recurring.
It keeps coming back.
It's a floater of a topic.
It is, absolutely.
Yes.
We flush, that bad boy is still there. We'll have to do, in fact, I remember, yes, my husband once telling me an awful story involving a coat hanger.
Always if it's at somebody else's house.
Yes.
Why is she leaving with that bag? Yeah. I'm just bobbing out to the garden with a shovel.
You'll never see me again. But anyway, yeah, there was. Anyway, I keep being sent pictures and information about men's toilets around the country. I won't even. I'm not going to list them now, but I'm going to make a coffee table book or a toilet reading book of men's. Anyway, but so last week our topic was body shaming moments. So I set this off by saying that there was a man at the bus stop who had seen me with my gym kit and said, "Are you going to the gym? Oh, good." And I was like, was that body shaming or was he just trying to make polite conversation? And also, when I was 16, my mum's best friend bought me a Thighmaster piece of exercise equipment for my 16th birthday.
Do they still have those?
I don't know. I don't watch enough infomercial television. The ab roller. That was big for a while. It was basically a rolling pin
on a ball, wasn't it?
A lot of money for.
But the Thighmaster was like a really dangerous, massive piece of stationery. You should be keeping giant documents together.
Yes, exactly. Big spring, big bulldog clip that you clamped your legs around.
There were some really nasty accidents in the 90s.
If you'd kept at it, though, I do think I would have been like that, you know, the Bond villain who could crush men's heads with their thighs. That's you know, I should have kept at it. It's a great source of dismay to me that I never did. But we've had some lovely contributions. So Amina wrote to say, "I'm sure that man at the bus stop didn't mean to be rude. I had a similar situation with a woman who took a packet of donuts out of my trolley in Asda and said, 'You don't need those.' She explained that I wasn't too fat now, but she wanted to stop me becoming too fat in future."
Wow. What a kind, controlling woman. Oh my God.
I understand where she's coming from. Sometimes you look at other people's shopping trolleys and you go, "Oh, really?"
Yeah. You can tell a lot, can't you? Yeah, I'm usually quite smug with my shopping trolley.
Mine's
usually full of fruit that looks really good, and I will take it out of the basket. I will put it on the conveyor belt. I will bag it up and I will carry it home, and then I will watch it disintegrate. Or I will take
a fruit displacement.
I'll take it on small holidays in the bottom of my bag. I'll add a piece a day, and by the end of the week, I've got a lovely trifle just mushed into the bottom of my bag.
You know, that is the way that they get those things that I put in my children's lunchbox, those kind of pressed fruit.
Just stick things. Them in a bag over a week.
It's all you need. Yeah, just condense your fruit. I was doing a show recently in which I would give chocolate away to the audience. And so I often found myself in supermarkets in far-flung places where I was on tour with a basket full of whatever was on special offer, like, you know, all the chocolate bars. And that feels like you could see the checkout person just looking at you like, lonely night in for this one. Game of Thrones and a 12-pack of twirls for this one. But no one ever said anything there. Karen has a horrible one. This is really bad. Karen, and I'm laughing, it's actually horrific. Karen says, "My friend's dad used to sing Queen's Fat Bottomed Girls when I went round to their house. The rest of the family told him to stop, but he said he meant it as a compliment." What a prick. That's bad. Gareth says, "My mum has always tried to feed me up, claiming that girls don't fancy skinny boys. When I finally came out to her at the age of 17, the first thing my mum said was, 'Well, men don't fancy skinny boys either.'" It's nice. Equal opportunities offence there. And then Rich finally says, "When I was a kid, my sister told me that I had really weird feet. And even though lots of people since have said they're normal, I've never really got over it."
Aww.
Oh, I think we need a picture, Rich, to be honest.
Tweet a photo.
If you could tweet that in, then we'll give you a verdict.
The weirdest one I ever had was when I was about 17 and I bumped my mum's car. And just a scratch. But I had to go around to her work in her car and tell her that I'd done this. And I was absolutely terrified because I'd scratched all the side of the car. And I took her out to show her the damage. And she looked at the car and then she looked at me. And all she said was, "Do you know what, Zoe? In this light, you've got an appalling moustache." So I was kind of relieved yet horrified at the same time that my facial hair was more disturbing than her dented fender. Yeah.
Well, that's revenge from your mum. I'll store that for my children just in case I ever need to really.
She was right.
Strike
I did have
at
a massive moustache.
Well, I mean, you know,
and I was a good 19, 20 years old before I realised I didn't just have to have one eyebrow. I could remove the middle bit.
Your mum didn't point that out to you as well.
No.
You had to discover that on your own.
Yeah.
Just cruel. She was cruel, really, in every way. So the I haven't actually got a list topic for this week, but let's just see what happens organically. Yep. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah, we can set it up for later.
Ash, just our final bit of, I think that's our, Claudette, here's another bit of listener interaction. Claudette emailed to say, Janet Jackson's Control rather than Rhythm Nation as album of the week is clearly insane. Fair enough, that you can have your opinion. It's true, that's a very good, probably actually a more influential record than Control, I don't know, anyway. And then Ash has emailed, are you gutted they went for Chris Evans instead of you? Which that harks back again to early on in our odyssey of doing this show for FUBAR, and I did say I would like to be the new host of Top Gear because I'm not very good at driving and I don't really care about cars, and I thought that would be a refreshing choice.
I'd quite like to be the Stig.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We were going to have Zane from One Direction. He was going to be the Stig.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I do get the gig, and it's not too late, actually. No. Ash, I mean, you know,
the full crew haven't been announced yet, have they? So
no, exactly. I'll leave my phone on, and we'll see
if that happens.
See, I think it actually would be quite funny if they did just go for a, because they're saying, oh, we are definitely going to have a female co-presenter, Jodie Kidd, I think, is being mentioned. There's some names of people who are very good at driving and who enjoy cars, but I think it would be quite funny if they did just get someone and go, listen, she can't drive but she's really pretty, so because we would all dutifully go absolutely mental, wouldn't we?
It'd be every week we see how long it took her to parallel park
into
a massive space.
I could so do that would be my absolute dream. I had to I was in the car park outside Next the other day, and there was a woman, and her car was too big, I'm going to be honest, and so she and I were basically, she was trying to get into the space that I was trying to leave, and neither of us were covering ourselves in glory at all, and eventually she had to get out and guide me out, and then I got out and guided her in. But it was one of those situations. I thought, I really hope no one is filming this on their phone, because it would be we were doing a disservice to our gender in every sense. So if anyone would like to suggest a list, if they want to tweet us anything pertinent that they feel would make a good list for this week, they're very free to do so, or don't, whatever you like, really. Because we have got plenty to discuss. The first thing I was going to talk to you about, Zoe, was Michelle Obama.
Yes.
Now, Michelle Obama came to London this week. Yesterday, I think, she was in London. She might still be here. Is she still here?
I believe so, yeah.
Is she? Have you been on the phone to her, Amanda, presumably, trying to get her in?
Yeah, I think she's listening, actually.
There's some Pims. She's a bugger for Pims. If she wants to come in for the Pims hour in the second hour, then I'll forego my can of Pims. She can have it. She met Prince Harry, and I'm much more fun than him. In every way. So
the picture I saw of them together on the newspaper, he was very splayed legged. I don't know whether you noticed that. Did you see that? He was doing the tube sitting stance. I was like, really?
Manspreading or whatever they call it.
He was manspreading in front of Michelle.
There was the photo of Obama with Angela Merkel as well, and Obama was manspreading quite severely on a bench.
Is that the one where they look like a sort of really odd scene from The Sound of Music?
Yes.
That was very funny.
The cut scenes from The Sound of Music. Yeah, I quite enjoyed that scenario.
The thing is, I manspread though.
I manspread if somebody else is manspreading, and then it just gets worse. Yeah.
Well, my husband, as you know, Zoe, is a very tall gentleman. In fact, you know too, Amanda. Mm. Some of the listeners may
do. I can vouch for this.
6'5", and so he has no option really but to manspread in many situations. And so I in the early days of our courtship, I used to sort of compensate. So if we were sitting next to each other on a train or whatever, I would always sort of like squish myself down into a convenient size. And now, as we've been married longer, I've realised I don't do that anymore. What I tend to do is fight back with my small but powerful knees, my footballer's legs. And you see, again, this is where I need the thigh master.
Yeah.
Imagine if I kept that up, how much pressure. adductoral or abductors, adductors, whatever, whichever way it is. Anyway, I could have done that. But so Michelle Obama, as well as meeting Prince Harry, she did something amazing. She went to the Mulberry School for Girls in East London, and gave them an incredibly inspirational speech about how she had overcome a working class background in Chicago to become who she is today. And she told the pupils at the school in Tower Hamlets that the world needed more girls like you to lead our parliaments, our courtrooms and universities. She said, with an education from this amazing school, you will have everything you need to rise above all of the noise and fulfil every last one of your dreams. And it's so important that you do that, not just for yourselves, but for all of us, because you all have a unique perspective. You have a unique voice to add to the conversation. Oh. She is inspirational, isn't she?
It is, yeah.
I know I said I didn't want to get inspirational this show, but I'm going to, because I didn't know anything really about, I've been woefully ignorant about Michelle Obama, because I was thinking about it, and the only thing that I've really known about her since she became First Lady is how amazing her upper arms are. Because that seemed to be the big issue,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes. A woman over 40 who can wear a sleeveless top without people spontaneously combusting in disgust. She's amazing. And I just had no idea and have been reading into her background. Michelle LaVaughan Robinson Obama. She had this, you know, a very normal blue-collar upbringing in Chicago, worked incredibly hard, did a 3-hour round trip to school every day, excelled in her classes. She was one of the only, in fact, she said that she and Barrett were the only black people in their law firm. They were the only black people in their department of the law firm, and then they met and everything went woo-hoo. An incredibly inspirational person. And I am wondering, could we... I know like now it looks like in the presidential race there's going to be the ex-wife of a president and the brother of an ex... brother and son of an ex-president. I wonder, could we not just skip straight to the wife of the current president?
Just hand it straight over
hand
to
it straight
her.
To Michelle. Is that wrong? Is that bad? Could that
There'd
happen?
There'd probably be some rules that are being broken, I would think. I mean, I'm no expert in this area.
But we really need someone who's an expert on American constitutional law. But
Or just get her and Donald Trump to fight to the death. And I think she does have the upper hand because of the upper arm strength.
The upper body, upper arm, yes.
Yeah. And if the fight was in a strong wind and a certain gust went under his coiffure, then I think she'd win hands down, to be honest.
Yeah, because she looks like her hair is held in place with product.
Yeah, was it Frankie Goes to Hollywood who had the they had the video where it was politicians fighting in a ring.
Oh, yeah, two tribes. Yes.
So very much like that, I think. What with the 80s revival, we'll have Michelle and Donald Trump just fight it out to the death.
Lovely, and we'll get Frankie Goes to Hollywood out of retirement to do the soundtrack. That sounds perfect to me.
Job that would done. Be a much more enjoyable campaign,
well,
I feel.
Although, I mean, Donald Trump is providing value for money the minute he's out of the gate. He is going absolutely nuts.
It's astonishing that he's made so much money, isn't it? For a man who probably doesn't even know where his own navel is.
Yes.
It's astonishing. Yes. You just go, look, at least the Americans have that. Anybody can become anything. That is astonishing.
Yes. To be fair, because I saw someone discussing this today and saying, oh, you know, is he really a self-made man? And someone was saying, no, he is. He's a self-made man. But he did start off, he inherited 30 million.
Yeah, that's...
But he has turned into some billions. Yeah. So, you know...
Whereas if I'd inherited 30 million, I would now be morbidly obese on a sofa with one tooth. And going, I don't know where it all went.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here right now, would we?
No.
Let's be honest.
And I just have an ocelot and a baby elephant. And I think I made some pretty wise investments.
As you drive your boat around your front room, going, where did it? I got the yacht. We scoff, but he's just going to be superb value for money. I mean, he's been racist already. That's like one already.
Straight out of the gate.
Yeah, it was crazy stuff about Mexicans. Absolute crazy stuff about how Mexico sends its worst criminals to the US. I mean, the Labour leadership race looks very dull. It's a shame, isn't it? But, you know, I mean, it looks dull anyway. But compared to...
So it's Hillary. Hair done Hillary.
Yes,
and who else?
And then there's Jeb Bush, and then look at me going, I really know. And then there's the guy.
I'd only knew it was Hillary and Jeb. I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, no, and there's again, similarly to Jeremy Corbyn, there's a proper left winger who's thrown his hat in for the Democrats. And then there's the Hispanic Republican candidate, Rubio.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I really, that's the problem, is we're only interested in the eccentrics, isn't it?
Yeah, and they do provide such glorious ones, don't they? They really, really do. I mean, it's because religion still plays such a massive part in American life and politics that it allows for such absurdities to come out of people's mouths during a general election. We just don't have it over here. We're much more secular, you know. But you just go, oh, I just wish somebody...
UKIP did their best, let's be honest.
Yeah, they did,
mean,
yeah.
It does
make it far more interesting if somebody stands up and goes, but God is talking to me through a giant trumpet and I know I'm doing the right thing. You know, this is far more interesting. This is a book that's from the Labour Party. I was speaking to God earlier. I mean, if Ed Miliband had actually dressed up as Moses when he'd unveiled that that monolith thing, I think we'd have, you know... parted some sort of sea down in Margate.
Parted Donald Trump's hair. Yeah. We would all have voted in our joes. I know. Yeah. I know the lack of... I mean, it's to our credit that we do... You know, we don't have that level of eccentricity in our politicians, but it would be great, wouldn't it?
It would. We did have the monolith. That was the... I think it was when they unrailed that I thought all was lost.
Yeah.
Apparently Ed Miliband said he wanted to have those promises written in stone because he wanted to see them every day, and I was like, well, they're in your hall, mate, now, aren't they?
No, and they're in a warehouse.
A couple of bikes propped
apparently.
Up against them. Justine's wife going, will you move that bloody monolith?
Stick it in the other kitchen. Just stick it in the other kitchen where it's out of the way. Oh, I know, let's not talk about that. That's going to make me sad. Oh, good, though. We've dragged it down. This is exactly what I wanted to do. We've taken it from being about the inspirational Michelle Obama to being about the sad defeat of Ed Miliband thanks to the Ed Stone.
Yeah. So, I'm here to help. Also, out of all of those kids in that playground yesterday who heard that speech, at least five of them would have gone, yeah, but I can't be arsed. You know, I mean, you also need ambition and goals. Not everybody's got those. Yeah. There'll be a couple going, I'm just going to see how it goes, to be honest with you. Got to wing it, try and... I might play the slot machines.
To be honest now, I've seen Michelle Obama give a speech. That's probably my life peak.
That's probably it.
I might as well not try to top that. So I can always have that to tell my grandchildren. So, fair enough. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and we had people who'd left the school. It was normally... We either had old pupils of the school who would come and tell you about their lives, or occasionally... I remember we had Alan Beath, MP, came in once for reasons I have no idea why he was there, but it was meant... We were meant to be very excited. And they were like, Alan Beath, he's a Liberal Democrat. I don't even know what they are. Fine. It didn't inspire us in any way to achieve or to aspire to greatness. We just mocked the people who came in. We just went, she thinks she's all that. Like, you know, it was like, I remember there was this woman who, like, now I can see how impressive she was. She'd written a book, she'd gone to China and she'd written a travelogue, and she'd done this epic walk in the footsteps of a great poet, and she'd written all about China, and, you know, and like now I would be fascinated. Yeah. But at the time I went, oh my
Whatevs.
God.
Yeah.
Look at her hair. Yeah, all that success, you still can't get your hair right. Again, like with Donald Trump, you know, the key is have good hair and the rest will follow.
You can get away with murder.
Yeah, it's advice that I haven't heeded myself, I should point out. Although I did go to Supercuts in Watford today, so thanks to them for this. Good. Now, shall we have a song chosen by our guest, Miss Zoe Lyons? Now, I know you have impeccable taste in music, Zoe.
Yeah.
I know you are a woman of great style, great
taste. Absolutely, yes.
So what have you chosen for?
I've chosen Fever Ray, When I Grow Up.
Oh,
yeah. Love a bit of Fever Ray. One half of the Swedish band The Knife.
Oh, my gosh. And look at me knowing... Look, blank face.
Mm. Okay, well, if you're watching telly at the moment and there's trailers for a new Swedish thriller, because we haven't had one for about 5 minutes, they're using the music... they're using The Knife. They're a Swedish electronic band.
Oh.
And they're a little bit dark. I did buy one of their more experimental albums not so long ago, and it was just too much. It was just a tap dripping for 20 minutes. I was like, wow, I can't believe I spent $8.99 on iTunes on that. But I heard of Fever Ray because I was listening to Desert Island Discs many, many years ago, and... It was Debbie Harry, Blondie, was on, and her choice of music was awesome.
As
she
would
was
hope
really
and
relevant and really up to date. And I thought it'll all be old punk. There was a few old punk ones in there, but
it'll all be going out. Iggy Pop, he was a bastard.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I never liked him.
But most of her music was newer music.
Great.
And I think I went away and found sort of three or four of the tracks that she'd recommended, and I just thought, Debbie, you're still so very cool.
She it was our album of the week last week, Blondie.
So very
Parallel
cool.
Lines,
and
yes.
then, so I heard this and I thought, I really like that because the lyrics, she reminds me a little bit, they're a little bit Kate Bushy lyrics in that they're just mental. And
that's
it's wonderfully,
never a bad
wonderfully,
thing.
Wonderfully imaginary. And
oh, do you know, this is going to be, well, this could be
well, it might disappoint horribly
thing.
And you'll be like, oh, what the hell?
If we come back from this record and I just go, good, so, anyway, lovely to have you. Just get out of my studio.
It's not everybody's taste, but I like a bit of Fever Ray.
Shall we hear it?
Let's
Fever Ray.
It.
What's it called, the song?
When I Grow Up.
When I Grow Up.
Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Now I really liked it. You can stay.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It was great. Well, a little bit Bjorky.
It's a little bit Bjorky.
Bjorky,
yeah,
yes.
There's definitely a bit of Bjorky.
There's nothing wrong with being Bjorky.
But Swedish as opposed to Icelandic.
Yes. Not that I'm lumping together everything north of us into one homogenous bracket.
But Iceland was ruled by Denmark, so they are slightly Scandinavian.
Ooh.
Ones. So you can, sort of. And they're all quite blonde and like cod. So, I mean, that is a sweeping generalisation.
I don't
yeah.
think that's racist, though.
No.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say that's fine. Absolutely bloody fine, yes. I'm delighted I like that. Because it is that sort of touch of electronica. Ever since, like, my formative years, Japan, that kind of slightly haunting synths. And, you know, I've always liked
Kraftwerk.
Yes. Oh, gosh, who didn't?
In fact, if I was going to end with this year, I was going to dress up as all four members of Kraftwerk and call it Kraftwerk in Progress.
Oh, that's such a good idea. Wow.
Yeah, next year.
Do you know, I'm delighted you're not going to Edinburgh as well, because obviously every week we have comedians on and we always talk about Edinburgh, and this week we don't have to.
No.
We're not going.
No,
so let's not
we're
bother.
Not going.
Let's
we're
talk
going
about other
nice
things. We're
going to
talk
time.
About your kite surfing.
I'm going to go kite surfing instead. I have booked myself on a kite surfing course for August instead of losing money in Edinburgh. I'll be losing parts of my face on Brighton Beach.
Better that than your soul in Edinburgh.
Yes, so I'll be learning how to fly a mahusive kite.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a brand name.
Mahusive.
Yeah.
Well, the Mahusive, they're very good. No strings attached kiting. This business has never taken off. And more sorts of puns in that.
This is more
area.
Stuff for your Edinburgh show
next year.
So you say.
It's all gold, isn't it?
Next year, Kraftwerk in Progress. It's all about kite surfing.
So.
You kite surf into the venue. Could you do that? Or would you have to be at sea?
It would probably be a bit dangerous.
Okay.
You do need some sea.
Okay. Yeah. So do it in Leith.
Yeah.
At the Royal Docks.
Do them. And I'm very mal-coordinated, so the potential for disaster is enormous. When I told my other half I was doing it, she nearly fell off the sofa hissing her pants loudly.
But she's coordinated enough not to fall off things.
Yeah, she's coordinated enough not to book up to do the bloody thing in the first place.
Can you tell me when you're doing it? And because I'm not going to be in Edinburgh, I can come down with my camera phone
and just
record
laugh.
Every second for the internet. That would be great.
Somebody once kite surfed over Brighton Pier.
Wow.
Yeah. I won't be doing that.
Oh,
like on. caught a wave and a wind combo, and got lifted over the pier.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
Whoa! So you will actually go up in the air when you?
Oh,
do
you
this.
Go up in the air on them. Yeah,
ooh.
That's the whole point.
Is that because I did this year when I was on holiday and I saw paragliding. And similarly, I mean, I injure myself. Like, I mean, I step on upturned plugs about three times a day. I fall over for no reason whatsoever. Not even booze related, just generally I fall over. And, and I looked at that and I thought, I could do that. Going up in the air on a parachute behind a boat. And then I basically was talked out of it. but I admire your pluck.
Yeah. We'll give it a go.
Yeah,
I think it must be, it's a part of the midlife crisis, I reckon. You just start doing things, don't you? We go, oh my God, I'm going to be dead soon.
Yes. Like, I've got, let's accelerate that.
Beside my bed, I've got the manuals for the motorbike license exam as well. Because I thought, oh, I'm going to do that as well. And I decided I was going to buy like a World War II scrambling motorbike. I mean, this will never happen, but it's all just part of the sort of madness. I did learn to scuba dive 18 months ago. I did that.
Oh, that's good.
And then we've started doing that and started to.
Yeah, that's a skill I attempted to acquire a few years ago. And I went to a scuba diving lesson in a very chilly school swimming pool in January.
Yeah.
And I was the only person on the. There was about 20 of us on the course, and I was the only person to fail.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that was the end of that's my. I will snorkel. I will snorkel,
yeah,
but
you
I
can
will
see
never
a
scuba. But
yeah.
I mean, you see, that's. So you've got good summer plans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go to Cornwall.
Nice, I like Cornwall, except for the roads, they're very annoying.
I know, can I fly? Maybe I could fly.
You can go to Newquay, but then by the time you got to the airport and then got to Newquay and then realised, actually, we need a car because we're a family.
Could I kite surf?
You
could I start at Brighton and then kite surf
around the coast of Devon and down into Cornwall?
Yeah, that could work. So good, so you're not going to Edinburgh. Hooray!
No. Yes, it feels nice.
But your career is. Let's just talk about you for a bit,
okay?
And then we'll move on to other things. But but you, because you and I have been going almost as long as each other.
Yeah, I've been going about it's 11, 12 years.
Oh no, I've been going a lot longer than that. Yeah,
you were already on the circuit by the time I started.
I was already sick of it by the time you started. I was already going, oh, I'm not going to do this for much longer. But because you were on telly this weekend, weren't you?
Yes.
What were you on?
Oh, this weekend, there was a repeat of Mastermind.
Oh,
that
what?
I did this weekend.
What was your special subject?
My special subject was the life and works of Quentin Crisp.
Oh,
fabulous.
Yeah, I really enjoyed getting to know him.
Yes, I mean, I could do nothing. What was?
Well, I didn't have a specialist subject, obviously. I didn't, so when they said, would you do it and what's your specialist subject? I went, yes, give me 5 minutes. And then we sort of sat in the corner and I found them back and we said, can we do Quentin Crisp? And they went, yes. I went, I'll do that then.
Did you give them options?
I really wanted to do The Life and Works of Grace Jones, but apparently enough hasn't been written about her because she's my big hero.
Oh,
but,
yes. Oh, now there's another album of the week that you could do. Filthy, filthy, filthy. Pull up to the bumper.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had to explain
to a friend of mine what that meant.
Yeah. Somebody told me, I was in the car today, and Tony Basil's Oh Mickey. Do you remember that one?
Oh,
that
Mickey, you're so fine.
Yeah. You're so fine, you blow my mind. And someone told me that is about anal sex.
Really?
Wow. Yes, and I was listening to it today and trying to work out. There is a bit where...
He's obviously very good at it if he's blowing a mind. Coming in at that angle.
Well, very good or very bad. Yeah. I mean, you know, could go either way. But yeah, and I just picture her in the... Because the video, for our younger listeners, the video for Tony Basil's Oh Mickey was cheerleaders, wasn't it?
Yes.
Because she was a choreographer, I think, and then she...
Were the little shorts involved?
It was tiny cheerleading dresses and pom-poms.
That's it.
But at no point did they in the video allude to, backdoor action. But anyway, if anyone wants to tweet in with other lists of songs about anal sex, then feel free. We're very open-minded. We don't mind. And who else was on with you in Mastermind? I'm obsessed with Mastermind.
There was... Emma Burton from... Used to be in EastEnders.
I'm not very good on actors EastEnders and stuff, but I'm sure she was I know, and you're looking at me like, oh, dear, don't put me on the spot because I should have known, and I'm sure you were lovely with her in the green room.
And a guy from Holby City who were all lovely.
And who won?
I won.
Yay!
Woo!
Of course you did.
With quite a low score, but I did win. But a win's a win.
I mean, some of us won with the highest score of all time, but not everybody. Not everybody. In fact, I think I've since been displaced, but at the time, I dined out. I can't remember now, but it was one more than Mark Watson.
Wow.
Which was all I needed to clinch victory. But I did feel bad.
What was your...
My special subject was Steve Martin.
Great.
I'd offered them British confectionery of the 1980s and 90s or Elvis Costello. And Elvis Costello had already been done. And British confectionery of the 80s and 90s, they said, don't be... fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, who's going to research that?
That's the weirdest thing. Anyway, so Steve Martin was what they were for. And I spent 3 days you know, as you say, it's a really lovely opportunity to just go and study something that you would not ordinarily do. So I read his autobiography, I watched all of his films, and it was the loveliest, most wonderful few days of my life. And then I went on to beat Mark Watson, who was doing a much harder subject, though. That's the problem.
Well, you know,
it wasn't a pure victory because he was doing the World Cup since 1979.
Wow.
I mean, you know,
that's quite a lot of things that happened
to remember. Whereas, you know, Steve Martin, interesting man, but luckily not that interesting. You know, he's not done, you know, he's not played hundreds of tournaments against other comedians for which I have to remember the score. So anyway, but yes, well done you. And have you been on a TV comedy show recently as well?
Did the John Bishop show recently?
I thought you did. Now, I haven't seen it yet. Will that still be on Catch
I think
up.
It's still on iPlayer. Yes.
Good.
Yes, and it went really well. I was really pleased with it. It was I enjoyed doing it very much.
Where did you record that?
The Hackney Empire.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
That's a nice thing.
It really is. It's great. And you know how these telly things work. You know, you're there all day, and I didn't get on until really, really late. So I was a bit sort of concerned that the audience would be tired and hot, and you know, you're kind of going, oh, are they asleep already? But I was really pleased with how it went.
Oh,
really
that's pleased,
great.
Because, I mean, the other thing with telly, of course, is you just have to do it, and even if it's not going well, pretend it's going well.
Just smile down the barrel of the camera like you're having the time of your life.
I have done that. Yeah. I did one of the Comedy Store, like, you know, live at the Comedy Store shows once, and I did a few of them, but there was one where, you know, and I'm not trying to you know, offer evidence in mitigation of my quite poor performance, but it was really late, and because I was in a play at the time, so like I could only go on last, and it was about, you know, 11:30.
Oh God,
really tired, and it wasn't terrible, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't the incendiary amazing gig that I'd hoped it would be. But I did have to. I was just all the way through it, just going
teeth and tits,
and then sure enough, you know, in the edit, it looks fine because they can put laughs on that other people have got. So thank you to all the other acts who were on that night. Here's a big thank you from me for those laughs. But yeah, it's actually quite nice and gratifying that there's still quite a lot of stand up on television, because I thought the bubble's bursting, it's all gonna, you know, after the McIntyre Road show, there's no, you know, it's gonna die a death. But actually
there seems to be more and more.
It's, I mean, cheap, I suppose that's part of the
appeal. Really cheap. We're really cheap. I mean, on the John Bishop show, they have music acts as well, and we were there. I was at the record for the first episode where they had Paul Weller on. I was in the second episode, but we watched the first record, and they're not cheap to put in there because they bring their own rigs and everything, and it took a lot of rehearsal and a lot of time. And then, you know, a comic comes on, they're like, hey, I've had some thoughts and I've written them on some paper. And it's so much easier, and you can whip through them. You know, with the bands, it takes a lot of time.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you know, just the rider for a music act is like, every time I go anywhere on tour, and they always say, oh, it's brilliant when the comedians come, because we always kind of go, can I have a, you know, just like some tap water and a banana?
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, when it's bands, they really, you know, because the culture of it is that you ask for loads of stuff even if you don't want it. It's just part of a sort of dick swinging exercise. Of, yeah. This is what we have. We are amazingly cheap. But long may that continue, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
Long may television have diminishing budgets and a need to fill time. It's working in our favour. So we will talk at the end of the show about what you've got coming up, apart from the kind surfing. Look at back in here. It must be something else. You must be working at some point between now and tearing your face off in August. So, but let's return, if we may, to the subject of politics, which we were flirting with politics.
Yes.
And let's flirt with it again in the form of Julia Gillard, the former Australian Prime Minister, who was talking this week about the famous speech she made a few years back about sexism in politics. If you remember, she challenged Tony Abbott, her political rival. He had made some comments about sexism, and Julia Gillard made a brilliant speech that very quickly spread around the world, where she called him out on being, said he has no right to talk about sexism, and she said that every day, in every way, Abbott was sexist and misogynist. I will not be lectured on sexism and misogyny by this man. I will not. And it was passionate. It was incredibly heartfelt. And she's been talking this week about whether she regrets giving that speech. She asked if she had any regrets about her famous 2012 speech on misogyny. Gillard had an unequivocal one-word answer: no. She didn't realise how far-reaching the impact would be, but in that state of cool anger that after all I'd put up with on gender, I was going to be lectured by Tony Abbott about sexism. She just makes some really good and very interesting points about what's happening with Hillary Clinton and the way that women are still judged differently in politics. Still somewhere in our brains is whispering a stereotype that says if a woman is leading, commanding, she has probably given up on female traits of empathy, likability. She's probably a bit hard-boiled. There was, in the article that I read about this particular interview that she'd given, there were some incredible things about the Hillary Clinton campaign that I wasn't aware of, that a tweet sent from Donald Trump's Twitter account. Here he is. Here he comes again. Donald Trump tweeted, "If Hillary Clinton can't satisfy her husband, what makes her think she can satisfy America?"
Wow.
That tweet was deleted.
What?
Even his insanity knows some bounds. When talking straight politics, Clinton's been accused of being cold and out of touch. But when she mentions her family, she faces accusations of being too estrogen-fuelled. And during her first run, one commentator famously asked, "Will this country want to actually watch a woman get older before their eyes on a daily basis?"
Wow.
Well, I mean, people like that should just be rounded up and put in them. I don't know, just put somewhere where they can't see anything.
Put in the corner of this studio and forced to watch us age.
Cope with life.
I would actually love to watch a woman age. Fascinating watching people age in front of your eyes, I always think.
What are they suggesting, that women as they get older should be forced to face the wall and just slowly droop into their own juices in the corner? I mean, what
you'll
a ridiculous...
put on masks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always a thing, isn't it? You can put on a mask for a younger
I never
person.
Understand why can't a woman be cold and quite hard? Why do they have to have that maternal... have to show it? Do they have to have it? You know, not all women do, you know. I mean, don't hand me a baby, I'll drop it. Not deliberately, but I'm not very good at those sort of things. It's a ridiculous...
She says not deliberately. You are never coming around to my house again.
But you know what I mean? It's this ridiculous idea that we all have to have... display the entire trait of woman. And, you know, in the same way that some blokes just don't like sport, doesn't mean, you know, it's... It annoys me. It really annoys me.
Yeah. Well, I think there is, there is a trend towards men being allowed to be a bit more vulnerable and approachable and, you know, and yes, and gradually sort of women like Julia Gillard are putting forward this kind of idea that, yes, we can be. But, it is difficult because all of the language that we have to describe it, when applied to women, it does, you know, it always sounds pejorative. If you say, she's very ambitious, that like, because I've said that about women that I know, and people are going to go, and it's like, no, I'm not being bitchy, I'm just being, you know, that is the, I was at one point very ambitious, and I hope to be again. But yeah, the language is just so loaded that it is very difficult to know how. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Hillary's campaign plays out this time.
Yeah.
Because I think people are a bit more aware and watching for it a lot more. We are all, and because of Twitter and because we're all a lot more connected.
She was a very, very good Secretary of State. Mm. I mean, that woman worked so hard. My God. I mean, every time you turned on the telly, she was somewhere, you know, she was in Mexico, she was in Morocco, she was in Malaysia, she was in any country beginning with an M.
Yeah.
She was... she worked so incredibly hard. You know,
I know, and then, you know, she was taken apart for possibly not having been shot at when she said she'd been shot at. But I was like, well, she's still gone to places that I wouldn't fancy putting myself. And it is a shame that we, you know, again, it's like Michelle Obama's upper arms, that we kind of hear a lot more about the other aspects of Hillary Clinton's life, about her marriage, rather than about her political career.
And who knows, maybe Hillary's had her own little dalliances. Well, we don't know, do we?
Well,
it's been suggested.
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's the one no one talks about. That's...
Yeah.
Well, that would be explosive, wouldn't it?
That would be like the shock when we found out John Major and...
Edwina Curry,
Edwina Curry had been like, I don't know. That sort of... pulled your taste buds in different directions, doesn't it? It's like,
I think if you are going to have an affair, do it with someone
completely.
That people are
going
to go, oh my God, really?
Yeah.
You know, defy the usual stereotypes of, you know,
yeah,
you know,
me and Christopher Biggins. Really?
You and Biggins, I can see that, yeah, though. That would be a lovely night out, you, yeah, and Biggins.
Yeah. I was in Australia when Gillard made that speech. I remember watching it, and oh, she delivered it so beautifully.
Mm.
You know, when you had that, because when I get angry, I had to go and complain about something this week, and I thought, come on, Zoe, you're an adult. What happens is my voice goes, just goes a couple of octaves higher, and then I'm like, why is it now cracking as well? Why has it lost all authority? And I think I'm crying. I don't know why I'm crying, but I think I'm crying. Because if you're a bit angry and you're trying to get a point across, I'm not great at that. I'm really not. But Gillard delivered it with such steely, cool commitment. It was a joy to watch. And he is a massive...
Oh, he's a bell end.
He's absolutely a massive bell. He's an enormous, enormous bell. And... Abbott looks like the sort of thing you'd find lurking under a rock at the bottom of your garden. You know, if there were kids playing and they picked up a rock and they went, oh no, there's an Abbott under there. Look at look at his eyes.
Oh, kick it down a drain. Kick it down a drain.
He's got freaky big eyes and pointy teeth and he's in Speedos. That's disgusting. He's a vile little worm of a man. So it was a delight to watch her just sigh through him.
Well, I think that that is the only time when it is when you're absolutely exasperated. I remember once I had a boss who I hated and would kind of try and confront him, but then get a little bit. And then it got to the point where I just thought, right, I'm going to resign. I just can't bear it anymore. And he'd just pushed me too far. And that was the only one of the very few times in my life that I've ever actually... I just thought, I just cannot be asked anymore, and just told him exactly what I thought of him in very dispassionate, very clear terms. And, you know, it's still one of those things that thrills me to this day. That I felt so good just kind of finally getting it all out. And I did have to leave that job. The outcome wasn't particularly great, but it did feel amazing.
Yeah, it's at that point, isn't it, when almost all emotion has got, like, it's burst.
Yeah. I mean, the awful thing, I sometimes have that with the kids where I'm like, I just can't, you know, I need to harness that power that I have when, you know, when I've had Lego thrust up my nose for the 16th time. That's what I need to, when I'm dealing with, because actually hecklers, though, I do find, I mean, I wouldn't say I've been heckled much in my career, but when it happens... Because you're sort of on stage and you're in command, because people always say, oh, it must be awful being heckled, but actually... As long as most of the room is with you,
yes,
then it's actually quite a nice, you know, it's quite a nice feeling of going, I'm going to be able to actually take you apart now.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have to sit there and take it.
Yeah.
And that can give you a sort of sense. And it's horrible, you know, you don't want to be bullying or, you know, unjustly cruel. But when someone has been an absolute arse and you're in the position where you can just go, right, I'm going to tell you. In fact, I remember a gig in Bracknell. Where Berkshire, for those of you who don't know it, Bracknell in Berkshire, and there was a guy who had been unbearable all evening to everybody, and then I was the last act on, and it was just one of those wonderful moments where everyone in the room was sick to death of him. Everyone had sort of tried to have a go at him, and I just thought, right, he's going to leave now. The minute I get on stage, he's going to go, because there's just no way that I'm going to put up with this. And so I managed to get him out, and then the woman he was with stayed. And I was like, sorry, do you not want to, you know, go? And she was like, no, I can't bear him. I can't. I've only been going out with him for a while and he's an utter dick. And so she stayed,
brilliant.
And the audience loved her so much.
Yeah.
You know, it was a sort of moment of going, yes. And because he was vile. He was really mean and nasty. And, you know, you just thought, actually, yeah, good for her.
Yeah.
We changed her life that night. In fact, and she did write to me years later and said, you might not remember me, but I was at this gig and this happened. And I wrote back to him and went, I bloody well do remember you.
And she had left him.
And she said, oh, yeah, I never saw him again. And now I've met someone new who's amazing. And so thanks very much for sorting it out. So, yes.
Unfortunately, the new person coughs all the way through classical music.
Terrible bugger for being on his iPhone during plays. But, you know, what can you do? There's everyone has a cross to bear. So shall we have a song now? This I've got in my running order. Song chosen by Amanda.
Yeah, we don't have to do that. I mean, I thought we should have another song by Bjork, actually.
Oh,
another
okay.
album track.
I've made you self-conscious about your music choices, have I?
What was it last week, the birdie song?
Something that I did, yeah.
Something you did.
And you went, this is bullying in the workplace being enacted.
On air.
On air.
How bad was it? I tell you what it was.
No. It was garbage. And I went,
that's right.
Ugh. And then the band actually. But actually, then we listened to it and I was wrong. I was totally wrong.
You were. So, and it was very gracious of you to admit that, Lucy.
Well, you
I
know.
Still feel a little tension in the air.
I know. I'm just.
There's a little tension.
I'm reeling her in so I can bat her down again.
I've got a couple of choices that I might play later. But
all right. Should we have another Bjork?
Yeah. What about Violently Happy?
Yes.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
We put a little sting on the end of that one to allow us to finish talking about Tony Abbott. I think we've dealt with him. Now it's Pim's time. In fact, talking about that song, Violently Happy, the dancing I did to that, fueled by Snakebite and Black, as we discussed earlier. So let's crack open the
it's
Pim.
It's such a there good go. Title as well, though, isn't it? Violently Happy.
We've all felt like that, haven't we?
Yeah. It's such a great title.
Yeah. In fact, that's maybe you do Kraftwerk in Progress and then my Edinburgh show next year will be Violently Happy.
Yeah.
It's a good night because actually the poster is, you know, you're smiling, you're in a in a field full of flowers and you're repeatedly punching Tony Abbott in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Yeah. It's a strong image. Here we go. Pim's open.
Pim's o'clock.
I hope that's reading well on the radio there, that you can hear.
Delicious.
Tony, I like that you just did a little twang of your... There we go, we're the Cantop band.
First Pims of the season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're
you
way
be
behind us.
More often.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Come in after
Cheers.
You've done your kite surfing. Cheers.
Nice.
It is nice. So I have a... Well, in fact, I'm going to get you to do your career of a great woman. This is something we do every week where mm-hmm. we discuss a woman who has inspired us or who we feel is in some way worthy of note. And I very excitingly have a woman who was suggested by someone on the Twitter. So I will save that and let's do, largely because I've forgotten who it was. So I... it's a brilliant... So no, I'm just... kind of forgotten her name, but it's an absolutely brilliant and inspirational story. So I will let you, Zoe Lyons, talk about your woman of the week.
My woman of the week is Boadicea, or Boudica.
Ah, Boudica.
Or Boudic, apparently she was known as in Welsh.
To her mates.
Yeah, Boudic. Hey, old Boudic. Old big busty Boudic.
Oh, the Welsh, that bit
yeah.
in there,
yeah.
isn't there?
Boudic. Boudic. Queen of the Iceni tribe up in East Anglia. As was sort of similar, I think.
The Fighting East Anglians.
The Fighting East Anglians. And I quite like... I just love the image of her. That it's such a strong image,
Chariot
isn't it?
With spikes.
Chariot with spikes.
Am I making up bare-breasted? Or is that just something that's...
Possibly
in
a strong wind on a chariot. It's hard. Because it is a cabriolet. So
I think I'm thinking of women on hen nights out the top
possibly.
Of a limo. That's the image I've got. The modern-day Boudicas of Norwich.
The modern-day Boudicas.
I've been in Norwich on a Saturday night and you see the women of East Anglia encapsulating the spirit
yeah.
of Boudica.
Yeah. And just find it quite fascinating because it's sort of fascinating time in the Roman times. And I mean, East Anglia is quite difficult to get to these days. And I think it must have just taken forever to get around in the chariot.
I know, from Liverpool Street. Where would she have gone? She'd have come into Liverpool Street.
She'd have come into Liverpool Street on a chariot.
Or possibly King's Cross.
Yeah, because her husband died and wanted to split the kingdom between the Romans and Boudica and her daughters. And the Romans went, no, we're not having that. We're going to have the whole lot.
Mm.
And sexually assaulted her daughters and flogged Boudica. And... she went, I'm not having it.
Yep.
She went, no, this isn't going to happen. Very much like Julia Gillard.
Yep.
With Abbott. And mustered a load of troops, got in a chariot, cabriolet, one boob out, and headed to
I think it was what is now Colchester.
Colchester, yeah, yes. Straight down. Well, I mean, flat journey.
Flat
she could
journey,
have done that.
But
she could have done that in couple of hours in a
Ginksters
in a Ford
one
Focus, as I've done that. Yeah,
Ginksters in one hand, reins of eight frothing horses in the other, and I think she did very well there for a little while. I think she
was victorious in that battle, in the Battle of Colchester.
Yeah, and then she thought, right, that's it. We'll have London.
Yeah,
and that was just when it became a bit of
I think, I mean, you know, yeah. She should have known. No one should aspire to London, really.
Londinium, as was.
As was.
And then eventually the Romans went, no, and remustered and destroyed the
Good,
Iceni
I'm glad you've
army.
Ended it on a downbeat note again.
But she wasn't killed by the Romans.
Oh?
Brave Boudicca apparently took her own life so that she wasn't taken by the Romans.
Wow.
She was a strong lady.
Yeah, I think that's a very worthwhile and worthy.
Yeah.
A violently happy.
Violently
or just violent.
Happy.
Just
and apparently
violent
she was quite a looker. And I love that fact that you... I mean, nobody knows. She could have been one-toothed with, you know, back boobs and a hunch. But we don't know. But it's just so much... It's so much more of a sell, isn't it? If she goes, she had red flaming hair that covered her breasts and tall and ranging with a strong voice. You know,
makes
she could have just
turned
up with, hello, I'm Boudicca. Actually, it's Boudicca, but nobody pronounces it right. Right, we're going to get in the chariots, right? Sorry, I've just lost another tooth.
Yeah, it makes her much more castable by Hollywood if
doesn't
you say
it?
She was a beauty, a raving beauty of her time. Yeah. No, it's like Cleopatra.
It's like Joan of Arc. She could have been a total turnip.
We don't know.
But it just sells if you say, you know, totty
well,
and
I mean,
a bit of armour.
Most women, you know, when you
roast
are...
Roast women? Is that what you just called Joan of Arc?
Yeah, but you know, like she was like most women. But you know, when you're engaged in physical activity, like fighting, the last thing you're worried about is how beautiful future generations are going to perceive you in your moment of...
That's a good point, isn't it? If you stood there just before battle going... Will my troops support me? Will I lead these men into a memorable battle? Will this go down in history? And does my hair look all right?
Yeah. But it's, you know, I bet she didn't care. Good choice,
thank
Zoe.
You.
I'm going to now lay on you my choice. And this, I knew the story. I didn't know the name of the woman, which is why I just had to look it up. It's Jane Elliott. So, this was suggested by our listener, Nicholas Stephen, the lovely Nicholas Stephen from Twitter, who's enjoying the show and said a wonderful woman that we should feature is Jane Elliott. So, I went to the internet and I looked her up. And Jane Elliott was born May the 27th, 1933, and she's still alive. She's still around. She is an American former third grade school teacher, anti-racism activist and educator, as well as a feminist and LGBT activist. She is known for her blue eyes, brown eyes exercise, which we will all know. So she was the person who invented the thing where a group of people, you take a subset and tell them that they're special and another subset and say you're not special, and then observe. It's basically a psychological experiment to see how people behave when they are given power over another group. And I had heard of this, and I, you know, yeah, you tell people with blue eyes they're special and people with brown eyes they're not. But I didn't know that she conceived this. She was a school teacher in third grade, which I guess is young children. And the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was shot, she was going to go and she was going to do an exercise with her class about Native Americans, about the way Native Americans were treated. But then after... Martin Luther King was shot, she said, right, I'm going to make this relevant to that as well. So she went into her class and she said, right, we're going to do an exercise based on eye colour. So she designated the blue-eyed children as the superior group. She provided brown fabric collars and asked the blue-eyed students to wrap them around the necks of their brown-eyed peers as a method to easily identify the minority group. She gave the blue-eyed children extra privileges such as second helpings at lunch, access to the new jungle gym, etc., etc., and very quickly discovered, and she did this over the course of a week, At first, there was a resistance among the students in the minority group to the idea that blue-eyed children were better than brown-eyed children. To counter this, Elliot lied to the children by stating that melanin, which is responsible for making children blue-eyed, was also linked to their higher intelligence and learning ability. So then the resistance fell away. Those who were deemed superior became arrogant, bossy and otherwise unpleasant to their inferior classmates. Their grades on simple tests were better and they completed mathematical and reading tasks that had seemed outside their ability before. The inferior classmates also transformed into timid and subservient children who scored poorer on tests and even during recess isolated themselves, including those who had previously been dominant in the class. So this incredible psychological experiment that is now, you know, is used. She was a great pioneer of workplace diversity training. She's been on Oprah. I mean, what more could you aspire to? But so she's had an incredible impact on the way that we perceive race and on the, you know, just what an incredible
and perceive
woman.
Ourselves as well. Yes. I mean, you know, it's like if you have one of those weeks where you've had maybe one or two things said to you that are. On the more unpleasant side,
like when the man said I should go to the gym.
So. Yeah, you know. Or
for example, is that good enough? Or
yeah, that sort of thing. You know, that sort of thing. Or you, perhaps you get a little bit of abuse on Twitter, as sometimes happens, and you know, blah blah blah. You have one or two or three of those in the course of a week. By the end of the week, you do feel slightly. It can impair you. Well, it has an impact on your self esteem.
Yeah.
It completely has an impact on your self esteem and how you then picture yourself in. In the big scheme of things,
yeah.
Whereas you keep telling somebody there, maybe that's why people. I'm sure that's why people. Big stars have entourages.
Yes.
Because if you've got five people around you going, but you are the best. You are. Look at those teeth. Look at that talent. You know, you've constantly got to have people around you go, oh, that was incredible. That was amazing. That was you. And you know, that kind of keeps it going, doesn't it? Keep that bubble going. You've got that. Constant boost to your self-esteem.
Yeah, and I mean, you do. I mean, yeah, because actually, I have to say, I have experienced both ways, as we all have, where you do sometimes think you're the dogs, and then sometimes you realise you're not. But it's, I thought it was particularly interesting in the light of the Rachel Dolezal, thing as well. Just the idea, of, you know, that.
I really don't know how I feel about this. I did listen to her interview last night on the radio. I still not sure how I feel about this at all.
I mean, the problem is I always... Anyone who has made an utter dick of themselves in any way, I always think, there but for the grace of God, you know, we've all done stupid things, but, I mean, it is obviously unbelievably culturally insensitive and damaging and offensive and...
I got the impression from listening to her she had no idea that it was culturally offensive, that she'd know... There was just seemed to be a complete disconnect there between what she had done and how that it might be perceived as culturally offensive.
Yeah,
a circuit break.
Yeah. I mean, it is a staggering... It's one of those that, you know, in the fullness of time, we'll all kind of come to realise what has... How we feel about it or what has happened. But, I mean, we've all had fake tans that have been a bit... deep, but you know, you don't run with it. You don't decide to tell you what. Since this has happened, I'll
just got a full
what's been interesting about it for me as well is that it's, you know, because she's been using language about trans, you know, the kind of language that people use about being transgender, and so. There's been this sort of, oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe she did just believe she was black. But you kind of go, well, I know a lot of people who have had feelings of being born in the wrong gender, you know, of both genders. And I don't know anyone who's ever believed. I think...
Transracial.
You know, no, it's merely anecdotal, but I think she's pretty much on her own there.
It's groundbreaking.
It is. But yes, it is one of those that's kind of making... Like so much this week, it's been a... the Tim Hunt story, which we discussed last week, and when it just happened, Tim Hunt had just made those remarks about women scientists being over emotional, and we were talking about it on the show last week, and we were laughing about how ridiculous it was, and that's kind of rumbled on now into this week, and he has been sacked. I mean, he didn't resign; he was sacked.
He was forced to resign, I think. I think the pressure was really put on him, and he had to go.
And so now there's been the backlash against the backlash, and so yeah. Boris Johnson and Brian Cox, and Cox, whose opinion I trust and value,
yeah.
has weighed in, and Boris Johnson, whose opinion I trust and value less, I would say. But so now there's been the kind of, well, this is a disproportionate response to his remarks. And, you know, and obviously you kind of go, well, yeah, it does make me feel squeamish when, because of any sort of Twitter pressure or social media pressure,
yeah.
someone acts very quickly. You know, something has happened in the heat of the moment, and then there's a reaction, and then again people react in the heat of the moment. Yeah. And it's like we're all just reacting, and no one sort of
and
calmly...
And snowball reacting, and it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Because apparently when he made those comments, was it in South Korea? Was he in South Korea?
Yeah.
There was deadly silence in the room, followed by sort of hushes of sort of...
We've all had gigs like that.
We've all had those gigs.
Is this thing on?
Sorry, there's new material. That won't be coming out again. Yeah. You know, and the thing is, he's a 72-year-old Nobel laureate who's probably done... I don't know anything about his work, but you don't become a... You don't get to that level of success without, you know, being at the forefront of some very groundbreaking work. And social skills are obviously not his hot point.
No,
that
gags,
is it.
Not,
gags are not his hot point. It's a shame that he has had to step down because of this. I mean...
But then there is also...
stupid things. It's really stupid things. But he's not... That's not his... It's not his job to be an ambassador for women in science. It's not his job. I mean, and everybody now in the lab would be like, you know, a bit awkward, a bit awkward. Sorry, just fell in love with you and I saw how you split that atom.
And it was actually a lot. The reaction to it, though, wasn't really... generally, like the bulk of the reaction, I think, wasn't really aggressively condemnatory. It was more taking the piss, and
yeah.
you know, it was female scientists. There was a hashtag distractingly sexy, and all of the ways of like, oh, look at this distractingly sexy picture of Ada Lovelace, you know. And so it was kind of done in good humour, but with a serious message about we don't want to be overlooked anymore. Because there's this sort of outpouring of grief about the fact that he's lost the career that he spent years building up. But then also you think, well, those kind of pernicious attitudes about women in science have probably prevented a lot of women having the careers that they might have had. And, yes, it's a horrible thing that's happened to him, but he has had a lot of advantages and privileges that he maybe wasn't aware of, and he certainly is now.
If anything... I would have just said highlight it to show what it just put a massive circle around it and go, this is what somebody in this sort of position feels about women in science. Let him carry on with his job and see how many women want to work with him in the lab, how awkward it's going to be in the canteen. Hi, Tim, can't sit next to you in case I... because of thermoreaction. It should be highlighted for how stupid and insensitive it is, but I don't think he should... I don't think he should... lose his job with this. His brain is wired in a different way.
Yeah.
It's definitely not for public speaking.
No.
It's just let him push his petri trays around, whatever they're called, these little test tubes.
This is why we're not the Nobel laureates, scientific brains. No, we don't know.
A shame.
It was reaction over reaction.
But that's how things happen these days, isn't it?
Well, again, another one that was making us all go a bit, oh, really? Was Matt Haig, who is a brilliant writer. He wrote an amazing book about mental health. And he tweeted, again, I see what we're going to do on this show is we're going to not ever talk about Twitter again after tonight. Let's just lay it to rest. But Matt Haig tried to... So he just tweeted and said, I would be quite interested in writing a book about masculinity. And in fact, let me find the exact tweet. But no, I can't. But yes, it feels like I should really have the proper tweet. There we go. Mandy, you can have a look at that for. But I'm sort of looking at an opinion piece rather than the actual thing. But anyway, so he tweeted that he would like to write a book about masculinity. Here we go. this is actually, Matt Haig wrote an article about it. So 2 days ago, I mentioned on Twitter an idea for a book about masculinity, which had entered my mind while being trapped on a train with 500 aggressive and drunk football fans. The book would explore toxic masculinity from a male perspective. It created a wild response. Within 2 minutes, I was met with sarcasm and derision. Oh, the things white, cisgender, heteronormative dude writers say, that is so adorable, was the first comment, and then it escalated. And it just, yeah, and so this poor man basically kind of got the male equivalent, I guess, of Gamergate, of just suddenly he's the worst man in the world because he's appropriating feminism. And he is equating the struggles of men with the struggles of women and talking about masculinity being in crisis and, you know, and came under fire for, you know, so people were saying, well, you're downplaying the problems women have to talk about yours. And I mean, that, you know, and you look at it and you go, well, no, he wasn't. He was just saying he'd like to write a book about masculinity. Yeah. And I think this is one of those sort of examples where you go, it's... You can see why people are angry, and we're all angry, and we're all sort of kind of a bit prickly and a bit sensitive, but he was really the wrong target.
Person to take that on. Yeah. I would be interested to read a book about modern day masculinity.
Well, I think he's probably going to go ahead with it now. Absolutely, because the publicity, because the pre-publicity he's had.
Because I think, you know, the idea of what it is to be a masculine guy has changed tremendously over the last 50 years or so. And the role of men within relationships and societies and, you know, pitching their masculinity, it is fascinating.
And I think we can all of us say we know lots of men who really don't conform to 90% of the sort of masculine stereotypes and who struggle with their gender on a daily basis. And in fact, a lot of the men who listen to this show, hello, who are delightful, enlightened men. And I'm sure who would be interested in reading a book about. And the thing that got me as well was it entered his mind while being trapped on a train with 500 aggressive and drunk football fans. Now, any touring comedian like ourselves knows exactly that feeling of are on that train. Yeah. I did it recently, coming back from a gig in Essex on a Saturday morning. Yeah. And it was, you know, there were a lot of fans going in. And, you know, it's just, seeing that kind of raw... I was going to say aggression. It's not really aggression, but, there's something, you know, I don't get to see that very often.
Yeah.
That kind of just what it's like when there's a huge amount of men in the same place all trying to out-macho each other and out-swear each other and out-sexist each other. And, and it is terrifying. And I can imagine if I was a man, I wouldn't find it any less terrifying.
No, probably more terrifying, because if they're going to pick a fight, it's not going to generally it's going to be with a bloke, isn't it?
It's going to be with my husband who's sitting there reading the stage listening to Joseph with the Technicolor Dreamcoat on his iPod, you know. I mean, that he's the one they're going to be picking on. So I don't know, it's sort of...
So was the storm about the fact that feminists were angry that they were taking, that he was sort of taking away from the feminist cause, that they were making little of it?
It was kind of, boo-hoo, your gender identity is problematic. Imagine how it feels for us. You know, why...
Isn't it incredible that any sort of argument... which is along the same lines, is then interpreted as a taking away from somebody else. It's a very immature way to approach things.
I know, and it is the whole problem as well with Twitter of, you care about this, well, what about that? I was talking to another comedian about this the other day, and he is a very famous comedian, and he was saying that every time he tweets something about a charity gig he's doing, he gets 10 people going, all very well to care about that, what about... And it's like, well... really, what do we, how can, but, and and that's sort of how you end up.
We've become so wrapped up in ourselves because we spend so much more time with ourselves looking at our little screens and in our own little worlds that we've actually forgotten what it's like to communicate with people on a face-to-face. Most of the things that people write on Twitter or Facebook, you would never say to a person to their face.
No.
Never. And I wonder if they'll just, 20 years' time, we'll just have completely forgotten how to interact on a face-to-face basis. I went to a little thing last night. I went to an induction meeting for... I'm going to start doing some charity work, and you had to go to an induction meeting. It was one of those things where there's 10 people in the room who've never met each other before, and you have to sit around and sort of go, hello there, I'm Zoe, and sorry, pass me a cracker. And it dawned on me that I'm now really bad at this
one-to-one social interaction.
With strangers. Mm. You go, God, this is becoming a skill that you need to sort of keep
on. I know, like handwriting.
Yeah.
Where you just suddenly go, I'm writing something longhand. I seem to have lost all control of my hand. It's so weird. Handwriting is going to be appalling in years to come, and everybody is just going to not be able to make eye contact at all.
Yeah.
And also, I think, identity politics is, now it's single issue politics, identity politics, the kind of idea of having any sense of a sort of more global view of things seems to be being eroded as well. But you see, that's why it's good that you're doing voluntary work. You see, I think that's what that is, the thing that will
just get out and about and talk to people rather than just looking. And
I think we're reaching though the kind of the peak of this, where I think that there is going to be, in the same way that teenagers now don't drink much because they've seen people of our age and gone, Jesus, let's not turn out like that. There will be a return to written communication, one-to-one personal interaction, leaving phones at the door.
Landline cafes.
Oh, God, a landline cafe. That's such a good idea. Hello. Right, business enterprise idea. Mm. If any entrepreneurs, Richard Branson, if you're listening, I know you are. A cafe where you go and there's just a landline that's free, because landline calls cost nothing now. A landline that's free, and so if you want to entertain yourself, you have to pick it up and phone your mum. And look at
you
the
have to remember the one person's number you can remember.
Which would be your family's number from ten years ago. I'm going to phone whoever lives in the house we lived in when I was growing up. That's the way to do it. I think that's a very nice idea. The landline postal. You do it in a post office. So you can, there's lovely writing paper and envelopes and pens and a landline telephone and a cassette recorder.
I saw someone using a phone box the other day.
Good for them.
And I thought they were for a phone call.
Were they shouting into it? No, they were.
At their mobile phone company? No, they were actually
using a phone.
When I used to live in a very touristy area of central London, near the British Museum, in fact.
Oh, nice.
No, it was amazing, but anyway, I don't live there anymore. But when I lived there, you would see the tourists fresh off the plane, and they see the big red phone box, and they'd go and they'd get the camera ready. They were like, do the picture of me coming in. And then they would open the door of the phone box and reel in horror.
Clouds of piss.
Yes, we just basically urinate in them. I'm sorry, we should have warned you about that. Oh, no, you can see some prostitutes calling cards as well if you would like to.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, it's landline cafe. I'm not sure we should be putting that out on the air. I think maybe someone's going to steal that idea. It'll be in Shoreditch.
It would have to be in Shoreditch with cats as well.
Yeah.
With some cats.
Or the trendier parts of Norwich. In fact, talking about Norwich, I am in love with Norwich. I would live in Norwich. Because Norwich is like, it's got the same kind of, Norwich and Bristol, and Hull, those are my three favourite places in the UK, because they all have that feeling, like when I first moved to London, whenever in the mists of time, back in the last millennium, that feeling of, young people doing exciting things, and there's sort of fun bars, and there's like, it's sort of bohemian, but not in a wanky, Shoreditchy kind of way. Yeah. It's just like, so they do have pubs where there's life drawing classes, but that's not as excruciating as it sounds.
Yes.
But I think London is slowly dying culturally. I hate to say it.
Yeah. I've just been to Madrid this last weekend, and there's an exciting city, and it's really hip, but it's hip without being dicky. And sometimes I just look around and I'm like, would you please all stop with the handlebar moustache?
I feel I should apologise to our listeners in the Shoreditch and East London, in the Silicon roundabout.
You can be hip without being a dick, and go to Madrid, see how it's done. They're way, they just do not try too hard. They're very cool people. They're very
Spaniards.
Yeah, lovely.
God, I love them. Should we have a record?
Yeah.
What are we going to have?
We are going to have a song sung by Kim Deal from the Pixies.
Oh, you know I love her.
Well, I mean, who Who doesn't love Kim Deal, right?
Nobody so, who
apart from
has
other members
any taste.
Of the Pixies that have fallen out with her. Because there's a bit of that going on. But it's gigantic.
Oh, yes. That was orgasmic.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Oh, lovely, lovely fading chord at the end of that song. And then there's Ali shouting. So, yes, Kim Deal, when she was still with the Pixies, actually, doing Gigantic. That's, God,
I saw
that
them
was
years
a
years ago
was a good
in Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
I know, I think I was probably there. Yeah. We were probably.
It was quite a sunny day, I remember.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good Glastonbury. Are you going to Glastonbury this year?
No, I can't do it now. No, it's way too
neither.
Full of wankers.
Oh, like, God.
I last went. When I was about 19?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I went three times. So I must have been 16, 18, 19. Then I was like, yep, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then now the prospect of being with, what, 250,000 people?
I know.
A lot of them with... No.
That's more people than live in most cities, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some towns.
Yeah, that's certainly. A big town.
Yeah.
That's a big town.
No, it's a shame because actually, like, now they're starting to book all the bands that I really liked as a youth because, you know, we're the people with the disposable income and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get the 40-somethings in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the very thought of it, even Latitude, which I did enjoy at points, now, no, I can't face it.
No. Latitude's just about doable for me. That's just about
Are you doing any comedy?
I'm comparing the Friday at Latitude
are
this year.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good, though, because then you get it out of the way and you can... Are you going to stay or are you going to head off?
No, I think I've got to go because I've got something else on the Saturday.
Oh,
so,
I see. That's a shame, because that's the way to do it, is to do your gig on the first night and then just stay...
Enjoy the other bits.
Unless it's gone badly, in which case then you have to leave.
Just leave town.
Because actually, Dodge, that's the only good thing about Glastonbury is it's so big that if you do have a shocker, then you could get away and just go to a field that no one's really interested in.
Have you gigged at Glastonbury then?
I've never done Glastonbury.
No.
Never fancy. Because I used to go as a youth. And then when I started doing comedy, I was offered it. And I... just thought, no, I've been in the audience for things and I know how horrific people are. So, no, I'm never going to do it. So I've never done Glastonbury, Reading, any of the ones I used to go to. I did do Latitude and that was fine. Yeah. But then that was kind of early days Latitude where it was still a bit, you know, more manageable, I guess. But in fact, I should plug it. I'm doing the Curious Arts Festival, which is, I'll look up when it is. It's in the New Forest and it's more of... it's a bit more sedate, I like to think. It's mainly authors and there's a lot of, you know, the comedians are all slightly older, bookish types.
Yeah.
It's from the 17th to the 19th of July.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. I know.
New Forest, lovely.
New Forest, and I can stay for the whole thing. So I'm going to do, I can't remember what night I'm doing a gig, but I can stay.
That sounds quite nice.
And actually, I did get offered WOMAD. And I haven't got back to them yet, which is terrible of me, and I will apologise. But I might, because WOMAD, world music is very much my thing, and it's sort of hosting events rather than actually having to get up and do a stand-up set in the middle of the afternoon to a load of children and a load of hippies' children. That's generally the worry, isn't it?
Yeah, on haystacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I am a hippie myself, but it is just when... You know, you see a three-year-old who, you know, and the parents are like, no, it's absolutely fine. They've heard everything. You know, we're very open to letting them just experience all of life. And you're like, no, they don't want to hear a 40-year-old woman talking about her miserable life. But, yeah, the other thing, nice thing about not doing Edinburgh, of course, is that if you're preparing for the Edinburgh Festival, you generally
can't
have to spend June and July just doing, you know, preview gigs to 10 people in pubs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a nice little artsy festival, that's going to be mine.
That'd be lovely. Yeah. Sort of dip in and out of the festival feel and not have to engage for a full month.
And there are some nice bands as well, so I will feel like I'm getting a little bit of a bit of the rock and roll experience.
Have a little half a cider.
I might.
Buy a bus that's been turned into a cider bar.
Oh, yeah, there'll be craft beers.
Yeah.
That'll be the thing. I'll be having I'll be talking to some bearded, well, probably someone from Shoreditch about their microbrewery.
Yeah.
And drinking. I always remember, what was the festival? There was a little one that I did. can't remember the name of it now, but it was really sweet, and it was in the West Country, and they had sort of the local cider makers had come along and set up a stall, and it was the sweetest, like the funniest thing, much funnier than anything that any of us comedians did, was the two guys on the cider stall who set up on the Friday. And they're selling their cider, and they're putting it in big, you know, like milk jug,
yeah,
those plastic milk jugs. And, you know, and at first it's all going very well, and they're decanting it into these milk jugs and selling them to people. And then by the end of the weekend, the sight of them trying to get the labels onto the milk jugs to get the stuff in, they were so hammered.
Because it's pretty strong stuff.
Oh,
I mean, the old...
yes.
The old microbrewery cider or whatever... sorry, that was a Pim's burp.
Oh dear.
I couldn't stifle it. I really tried to.
Oh,
and it just...
dear, that's not what our listeners want to hear, is
no,
it?
No, not that one. That was... no, sorry about that. Very uncouth.
Yeah. Well, the problem with brewing your own, as I've discovered, my husband has set up a microbrewery in our house.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of joining in. You know, if you can't beat them, join them is my philosophy. So I know all about grains and mashing.
Does it smell like a brewery?
It does, in a very nice way, actually.
Is it quite warming, sort of a hopsy smell?
Well, you know, those who've been to Edinburgh, yeah, and then when you step off the train and there's that beautiful, malty, lovely, hopsy smell. So it is like that. And I'm not actually a big beer drinker, so it's quite safe for me because we have copious amounts of beer in the house and, you know, I don't feel inclined to touch it. But it is really good fun. But it's very difficult to work out actually how alcoholic the things you are making are. Because, you know, you have all your ABV tables.
Do you have like a canary that you give some to? And then
I think I am the canary. Justin just hands me a little taster of something. And when he has people around and we taste things. But yeah, he made a wine out of tea bags, out of herbal tea bags. And I was like, "Well, this is not going to be good," but it turns out actually very pleasant. The herbal tea bag wine, yeah. It was like a sort of. In fact, no. He made two. So the herbal tea bag wasn't great, but he made one out of. It's called Wurzel's orange wine, and he'd found it on some homebrewing forum. The recipe. And it's just like orange juice and grape juice and, you know, whatever else you put in, sugar, yeast. And it's delicious. It's like a really nice rosé.
Oh, okay.
But I had a glass of that and I was like, oh, this is delicious. Well done, darling. I very much approve. And I had about two, maybe three glasses of it. And the next day, oh, my God.
Blind in one eye.
Oh, and I was like, never again. And I said, oh, how alcoholic is it? And he went, I don't really know. Oh, you know, it's hard to tell. And I was like, I've just drunk a litre of vodka, essentially. Yeah. I'm painting a terrible picture of our home life, aren't I, really?
No, it sounds great. I want to come round and sample the brews.
Well,
I've had some very strange drinks around your house, Lucy, actually.
Yes.
There was a white one and a red one.
Oh, dear.
In the matrix.
Wasn't that Justin's special?
The white one tasted of bubble gum.
Oh, no, those were the homemade vodkas. Yes. So the homemade vodkas, this was in our old flat, yes, where we didn't have the room for the home brewing. So Justin used to make flavoured vodkas and some experimental brews there as well. There was
just
the one you had.
Chewing gum into, put
yeah,
gum into.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah. They were sort of fizzy sweets that I'd bought and I didn't like. And Justin said, oh, I'll turn that into a vodka. And we had Werther's Original Vodka.
Okay.
We had, none of them were nice. None of them. Lemon was all right. The sort of made a homemade limoncello kind of thing, which was it was just lemons and vodka, but what's not to like? But it's trial and error.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Anyway, festivals, good. Let's move on from my private hell. Should we talk about the Women's Football World Cup?
I've seen snippets.
I was hoping you would have done. I thought this might be the case. Good.
And really enjoyed it so far. It's been great. It's great that it's got so much more coverage this year than the other year.
Isn't it amazing?
It's brilliant.
You know, I had never heard anything about women's football. I mean, I don't pay attention to football in any way.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, finally, there is some interest.
It's on BBC Three, and if you press the red button, there's more of it. But they still haven't
stretched the budget to having commentary through the break, which is quite amusing. So they just play some music and show some repeats.
Oh, really?
A dingly dingly, dingly dingly, dingly dingly. And it's sort of on loop as well. So it's
what
a bit annoying.
Mean,
after
so
15 minutes, it's like dingly dingly.
So
they sort of they snap off for 15
during
minutes.
During half time?
Yeah, half
just,
time.
That's incredible.
There's no chit chat, no sort of. They just put some dingly music on.
We could go in and fill. I mean, God, yeah. That wouldn't cost much. Ten. Yeah. We'll go. We might not talk about football,
I mean, I don't know,
but at least it'd be something.
I mean, the budgets must be such that they thought we can't have 15 minutes of chat in the middle.
We can't even afford
a
couple of stand-up comedians who know nothing talking about, gosh. Oh, that's mildly depressing then. But anyway, but the England women's team are doing very well.
They're doing good, aren't they?
And are playing tonight, in fact.
Who are they playing tonight?
Colombia.
Oh, OK. Yeah.
Do we know if they're any good?
They're usually quite good at football, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty good at football.
Yeah.
Well, the men's team were certainly very, very good in the World Cup. The German women's team are very, very good. They've got quite an intimidating manager, coach. Yeah.
That's one of those
words. She looks like she has a strong upper arm.
She could fight
her
Donald
Michelle
Trump
Obama
and Michelle Obama.
Arm wrestling. There's a thought. Anyhow.
Well, a lot of men I know said that they've... men who are interested in football, which I do know a few, and they've said, oh, they quite like watching the women's game. In the same way that, like, women's tennis is now actually a bit more interesting because, you know, it's not just about power serves. And they said, actually, in the wake of FIFA and all the awfulness and how horrible and corrupt men's football is, that actually it's nice just to watch football that is a bit, it has a
been tainted
apparent
by
degree
that.
Of purity about it,
Some incredible skill, they're incredible athletes, and it's really beautiful to watch, it's fantastic. There's been some really, really good football.
Are they, they're not professional though, are they, at this stage?
Some of the England team play for various clubs over here, but I'm not sure what sort of pay they'd be on, or what sort of, you know,
whether they have to have day
jobs. Ladies Arsenal, and I think the Arsenal side are probably the most well known. I could be completely wrong, so don't
quote
me on that.
Yeah, no, Arsenal ladies, I have encountered them. Yeah,
but no, there's been some great games so far, and I enjoy watching it, except for the intervals.
The lack of entertainment in the intervals.
It's like being trapped in a lift.
That's so weird, though, isn't it? That you sort of think, well, if you don't want people to switch off, you really should just sort of give them. I mean, imagine if just in the middle of Broadchurch or whatever, they just went
15 minutes of what you had for breakfast.
Yeah.
Which uniform, which strip you like the best.
Well, presumably as well, all you need is someone literally reading out information about the teams, because we don't know. They're not in the tabloids every day. We don't endlessly get fed news about their partners and their sexual preferences, and you know, it would be fascinating to hear all of that.
All
of that. Muckraking in the middle. Well, now this one, oh my God, she's no better than she should be. You would not believe what she's done. I would do that. You see, I think we could definitely do that. Now I'm going to stay on a sporting theme and move to a different sport: cycling.
Okay,
Zoe Lyons.
I'm not very good at it. Last time I went on a bike, I misjudged two bollards and ended up on the floor.
This bodes well for your kite surfing, doesn't it?
That's what I'm saying. I'm really cack-handed and
last time I went cycling, I was only in a park, because I don't trust myself on the roads anymore. And I was in a park and got a bit carried away with myself. I was like, oh yeah, I'm doing pretty well. And then turned around to tell my friend who I was cycling with how well I was doing. And then took all the skin off my legs.
Oh,
Oh, like weeks of recovery from that. So I mean, so we're not cyclists, but there was a story from the world of cycling that kind of made me laugh and sigh, about there was a one day Belgium, right, we're going to Belgium. I'm trying to talk about cycling without knowing anything about cycling. I'm gonna carry on. So the Julien de Hoor, who is a female cyclist, was celebrating a victory in her first race back from a 6-week layoff at the Flanders Diamond Tour, I'm going to say. Anyway, so the organisers of this, anyway, this cycling competition, the organisers had employed four women in slight bikinis to parade through the VIP area during the race, and then appear at the foot of the podium itself as Julien de Hoor celebrated a well-taken victory in her first race back from a six-week layoff. that the cycling press is yet again talking about another sexist display, which overshadows De Hoor's triumphant back-to-back victories is bad enough, but that her moment of celebration was upstaged by a display that is either degrading, humiliating and demeaning, or something out of a Borat-style satire, depending on where you sit on the spectrum of offence, is worse. One of the journalists, a woman called Maureen DeVries, tweeted a photograph of the podium, and it is this... These women who've just done an amazing athletic feat, they've just won the cycling race, and then they've got three dolly birds, is the
in bikinis,
you know, from the 70s, in bikinis, sort of standing there, and to their credit, kind of looking a bit like, what the hell are we
doing? What do we do now?
Yeah,
do we?
Because normally, if it's a man...
Do we awkwardly get sprayed with champagne?
Such a weird thing. The idea of the podium girl.
Yeah.
Which, and because I, you know, have been involved in like things like the world of poker. I used to play poker a bit, and I would go to poker tournaments, and there would always be scantily clad women at the poker tournaments. Mm. And the more women that there were involved in these things, the more, you know, and we weren't sort of offended or horrified, but, you know, you chat to these girls, and women, in fact, let's not demean them, but, you know, you talk to these other women, and they're there in a bikini. And you're there kind of playing poker. And it just feels like there is a massive disconnect between the roles that we're expected to play. And the same with gaming as well. Like, I've been to a few... I used to do a thing for PlayStation. And so I went to a few sort of gaming events and stuff. And again, there were booth babes. So, you know, the women who stand enticing the men into... come and look at the latest games developments. And it is... Yeah, it's just, again, it doesn't really... I mean, it just baffles me.
Mm. It's the ones that Formula One really is the one that gets me, where it's all that money and machines and predominantly blokes, isn't it, driving? And then it's like, no, we've got so many tyres and exhausts and hard things. We need softer things to look at. And then they just wheel out some woman in a bikini, and it is the most bizarre coupling of is it? I suppose it harps back to it's just really old fashioned now. That's not what it looks like, because it harps back to the sort of 50s and 60s when it was men in cars and men went to see these things. Men went to see racing cars and men driving cars, and then just to everybody knew that they weren't homosexual, they'd throw in a woman because there's a lot of men there. And they're like, look, we like the cars, we like the men, but we also like a soft lady with a breast that we can visibly see. And it's a sort of we're not gay sort of thing that went on. And again with the cycling, lots of men appreciating men
in
and
tight shorts,
just to, you know, and it's going to just to prove that we are not homosexual, we have a lady in the bikini, you know, but we do love the men, we really love the men, we admire the men, we love the men, tiny little shorts, you know, and oh, you can see everything in the shorts, so everything
every
is
lion's
visible.
Repressed French homosexual is a skill that I have no idea you possess.
So they throw in a bird on a bikini.
Well, in fact, one of the poker things,
boxing.
Yes, the card lady.
A lot of men shouting at men, wearing shorts with glistening bodies and incredible pecs. And just so that you know, none of them are gay. There's a lady walking around.
There has to be a lady walking around in a state of undress. Well, but one of the poker things they did... Oh, sorry, carry on.
They should have perhaps changed the template somewhat by now.
Yes, well, they did try.
So if the women are stood there with one looking awkward, going, what do I spray with champagne? What do I do?
I don't normally spray my mates with champagne.
This template should have been addressed prior to...
It's like when you turn up at an event with, like, your mate and one of you's gone for... like really dressy and like you're in jeans and you're like, oh my god, why didn't we should have consulted about this. But because the poker thing, one of the poker things, they did say, oh, we've it is sexist, so we've got some men as well. And it was like, oh, do you know, no, you don't really get it, do you? I don't really, you, it's a, I mean, yeah, because then it does lay it bare, doesn't it, as the sort of, you go, well, yes, it is. It's trying to connect sex with whatever activity you're engaged in. And, I mean, poker is not sexy. You're up late, you're all drinking and playing poker, and it's like the last thing on your mind. You know, it's the time when you should be having sex. If you were a functional, normal human being, you would be in a relationship having sex at home. You're not. You're doing this other thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to try and somehow make it sexy, like you say, it kind of smacks of some desperation to prove something.
Yeah.
And as a woman playing poker, you just go, well, I don't feel that. I'm not going to look at that man.
That's really not for me.
I mean, it is always, you know, the ogling men thing. I mean, I don't really know any women who do that. I mean, I suppose, you know, like hen nights, there's a kind of, oh, it's what we're meant to be doing and it's all fun. But I really don't think, I mean...
Not to the same extent, though.
No.
And also, I mean, audiences for these sporting events have changed. I mean, a lot of women go and watch Formula One. Mm. A lot of women go and watch boxing.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't understand why, but...
I don't mind a bit of boxing.
Do you?
No, yeah. I don't mind it. If they've chosen to be in there, I'll sit up late. So if I come home late from a gig and I'm a bit angry, I find it really calms me down.
Well, I like wrestling for that reason, because then they're not really getting hurt, so it's okay.
Whereas I like the full cage fighting wrestling, where I know they're getting hurt. And I think, well, somebody else is experiencing some pain this evening.
Yeah, fair
enough.
But
at least I have a full set of cheese. But, you know, audiences have changed, so they need to. More importantly, this woman who's won the race in Belgium has completed an incredible feat of athleticism. The entire focus should be on her and not the woman beside her who went, well, I just got this morning, waxed a bit, you know. the achievement has been the woman who won the race.
I had, because I've got friends who used to be the Dolly Birds,
yeah.
And said it was always, like, really awkward being at... You know, because you would learn. So they would learn stuff about whatever the event, you know, Formula One or poker or whatever. But always just feel a bit like, oh, this is a bit... You know, I mean, I'm being paid to be here, but it's kind of awkward because I've got no interest in it. And none of the men... You know, and the men, bless them, you know, will they want to talk to the pretty lady? But all they can really talk about is the sport or whatever they're there for, because that's all they really know about. And the whole thing is just so buttock-clenchingly awful and
old-fashioned and awkward
for everyone involved. It's very hard. Now, Amanda, are you signalling me to say...
That's your 1 minute.
That we've only got a minute.
Yes.
I'm sad.
Don't fluff it.
I know, this is the crucial moment. Well, I wanted to talk so much more about what you're up to, but it's just going to be kite surfing and
gigs. Stuff and gigs and service
stations. She's comparing
stations.
A latitude, so, you know, and,
stuff and gigs.
Look up her website, ZoeLyons, probably .com, .co.uk.
.co.uk, yeah, and I update it, so I'm really bad at it and I can't understand it.
No,
I've bought
I don't,
a book,
I don't.
But...
No, that's fine. Don't go and look at her website. Don't go and see her. You'll only encourage her to go and watch boxing. So, it's so lovely to see you, Zoeland.
Thank you for having me.
We've just finished the PIMS. It's all gone terribly well. We'll be back next week, and I want to say a huge thank you to Amanda Redman.
Always a pleasure.
And didn't actually get to play any of her own records, did you?
I've got to play one.
Oh, yeah, okay. And it was a good one. Good. Well done.
And I got praised for it. So
you did. And if anyone wants to tweet us any abuse of Amanda's record choice, or anything else, tweet us at FUBAR. And we'll see you next week. And we're going to play it, I guess, with another Bjork.
Yeah, Like Someone in Love.
Oh, yes. Yes, we chose it. We love it. Bye.